time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Lisa Dugard and Allie Pearson, who are both with the Defender Association, and Bob Barnes, who has just been on the show recently, and one of the organizers of the recent LEIU Welcoming Committee, amongst other names. And we're going to be discussing police accountability issues this morning. Thank you all three for coming in.
Good morning, Mike.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Let's start out, and if you could tell our listeners, what is the Defender Association?
Sure. We this is Lisa Dugard, and we are the largest public defender agency in King County. So obviously we represent thousands of individuals who are charged with crimes, but we also have a project that's been working for the past 4 years on police accountability issues as well as other racial justice issues in the criminal justice system.
Very good. And what caught my eye was an email that your group had sent out just in the last few days about a request to the OPA, and I'm wondering if you can tell us about that.
Sure. Well, let me start a little bit by how this came about. And I'm actually a law student at Seattle University, and I've been working, sort of researching the Office of Professional Accountability for the past year and sort of addressing the less opportune methods for redress for citizens who have complaints against police misconduct. Sort of researching that process, asking a lot of questions, and realizing that there's very little forum for people to sort of be public about police misconduct. And so in March, there were some anti-war protests after the war started, and a bunch of folks called the Defender Association, and they were witnesses, and they were people who were actually affected by police misconduct at these rallies, and it sort of became obvious that they weren't going to get an opportunity to complain about the police because the Office of Professional Accountability won't look at complaints of tactics that the police use, meaning if it's a procedure that is typically employed and directed by the higher ups in the line of command, the chain of command, then they won't necessarily look at it because it's not individual misconduct. And so these protesters who were mistreated don't have any way to address that. And so we sort of started thinking that maybe we could address this through the Citizen Review Board, which are three community members, and they were appointed by the mayor to essentially audit some of the complaints that go through the Office of Professional Accountability. And this sort of coincided with a complaint that they had, that they weren't really doing much. They didn't really have the ear of the mayor or the OPA at all. And so we sort of thought that maybe a good thing to do would be prepare a public hearing on these protests to show this, to present to the civilian, the Citizen Review Board, and sort of let them hear some of these things. And the reason we picked them in particular is because they have no authority to necessarily review individual complaints and make sort of take action or make you know, a disciplinary request necessarily, but they are the liaison between the community and the OPA. And so they, I was actually reading a little bit about them this morning before I came here, and apparently they're supposed to take the pulse of the community and report back. And this is certainly, the pulse is certainly, of the community is certainly raised since these protests. And if they could possibly hear these complaints about policy and procedure and then make a recommendation then to the OPA, to the city council, and say, look, like, this is something that's not being addressed at all through the OPA, through the methods of redress, maybe then these protesters and other folks could get a voice on that.
Okay. And so you had that in March, the anti-war protests, and then more recently you had the excuse me, the LEIU protests, which really seemed to prompt you to move this forward.
Well, actually, it goes back, you know, quite a bit further. For the past 4 years since the WTO, we've had episodic, you know, policing of protests in ways that are alarming, that people have given very, very compelling, very articulate testimony about in city council hearings, tried to speak about in the press, although coverage has been in the mainstream press in Seattle has been minimal. And this isn't new. It didn't start in March of this year. The LEIU and the arrests at and treatment of the marchers at some of the anti-war protests were typical, but I would say not you know, not even really an escalation. This is a pattern that we've seen since 1999, and the pattern is essentially when large numbers of people are exercising their constitutional right to assemble, march, and address issues of public concern. The Seattle Police Department seems to have a really hard time identifying people who commit crimes and arresting them. With regularity, they allow such people to go unarrested, and instead they turn on the crowd itself or the assembly itself, and in a whole range of tactics, shut that assembly down, end it prematurely, terrify people who are participating in it, and deter other people from coming out the next time, which is one of the things I think is so important about putting a stop to it. We've come to a point in Seattle where people think that they're risking arrest to go down and exercise their constitutional right to address a political issue in Westlake Park or on the streets of Seattle. My sister, who has a 3-year-old son, used to take him to political events, and she stopped doing that because she can't take the risk. And that's not an acceptable state of affairs in Seattle. So it's this range of tactics that have been aimed at political protesters for the past 4 years that would be the subject of a hearing if the Office of Professional Accountability Review Board decides to hold one.
And do you have any belief that they wouldn't want to hold one?
Well, we don't know. They're a new body. They were sort of commissioned last year, and nobody, including them, really knows yet what they can do or will do. As Ali said, there's a lot of broad language about what their charge could be, but there are no procedures that are, you know, that provide for the type of hearing that we're asking for. On the other hand, there's nothing that says that they can't hold such a hearing. And why it's so important is that individual police complaints that citizens file or residents of the city file about events like this are treated through the normal complaint process as outside of its scope, because they're not complaints about rogue officers, usually. They're not complaints about individual officers violating department policy, which is all the complaint process addresses. Instead, they are complaints about department policy. They are challenges to the department's choice, the organization's choice, how to deal with protests, and they call into question the legality of that and the wisdom of that. And the director of the Office of Professional Accountability that handles these individual complaints has said repeatedly that that's outside her the scope of her work, and that if anyone's going to address that, it would need to be the review board.
And that would be Sam Pelka, who's...
Right, it is the director of OPA. And I guess our challenge is, and we're not necessarily expecting that the review board will or won't hold the hearing. We're saying, if not them, who? And this is really the last step in exhausting the procedures that the policymakers in the city of Seattle have provided its citizens. You know, this is the last step people can go to. If the review board declines to get into this area, there really is no one. But it's important that we find that out
and create another mechanism if that's not available. And I think, you know, taking this issue up to the context of it being policy, not misconduct, is really the key to it, because, you know, in the past, we've been channeled back to, well, it was that bad officer or that piece of misconduct, or it was a rogue cop out in the street. And what we're seeing is a policy pattern that it's not like a bad cop. That cop was following instructions. And we've seen it, I think, you know, even, well, the most clearly during the LEIU incidents that there was a very well-executed military operation that was conducted by the police here. You know, and it wasn't just the Seattle police. King County was out there. It was a coordinated domestic police-military activity. And if we don't take it to that level, we're missing what's really going on, and individual police officers could be even disciplined, and it would miss the point. You know? And I think it's also important for us to look at this not just being a Seattle phenomenon. We've been getting reports from around the country that the operations that we've seen conducted here, when I say military operation, I mean the way the troops are deployed in the streets. It's a very well coordinated activity. We've seen those same kind of tactics used in other cities against peaceful protesters. And, you know, so that's the level we've got to keep this whole campaign on.
Yeah, there's little doubt that police agencies around the country have met and coordinated their tactics, and that they've learned from one another since the WTO. During the anti-war protests, protesters, peaceful marchers, were fired on at the port in Oakland and hit with wooden, what I would describe as wooden bullets. Apparently, they're called something like hypercharged batons in local police speak. So at the LEIU for the first time, SPD gets out their wooden bullets, and local organizers like K.L. Shannon emerge with these, you know, bright red wounds on their bodies. They've been shot at by our police department. Kale's a peacekeeper, someone who's well known to the police as someone who attempts to protect people and keep people safe in situations that can be tense. And it's just, when we've come to the point where the Seattle Police Department is shooting at K.L. Shannon, no matter how big or small the ordinance is and what you want to call it, and when she emerges with a wound on her body, it's really unacceptable. But it's not just this, that technique. It's the technique of trapping people who are in a public place, who are engaged in constitutionally protected activity. You can't possibly describe what they're doing as a crime. And yet, police forces around the country, this happened in Chicago, it happened in Washington, in Lafayette Park, happened in Chicago, I think, on Lakeshore Drive, and here in Seattle on First Avenue on March 22nd. Police officers in huge numbers surrounding people, preventing them from marching, preventing them from leaving, and essentially kidnapping them in public and holding them for long periods of time until two things. One, the demonstration itself has been destroyed, so their First Amendment rights have been lost, and the purpose for which they gathered is over. And then people are allowed to leave and made to feel as though they've been treated as though they committed a crime, and they're lucky that they don't get arrested. That's clearly something that has been talked about nationally by police forces, because you see the tactic suddenly everywhere. So I think Bob's right that's one reason that it's important to confront these techniques now.
Yeah, I've seen in numerous media accounts where the police have said that they learned from this incident and that incident, and they frequently share information about their tactics. Getting back to the OPA and the review board, this was something that came out of a blue ribbon panel that supposedly was that post WTO where this was going to be the new solution, or was that actually cooking before that?
No, the panel that recommended the structure that Seattle adopted came out of a police corruption scandal from the mid-90s. This is the case where a police officer removed $10,000 from a crime scene after an elderly man had been shot by police. And he returned the money after talking with some other officers, but it wasn't reported up the chain of command. And recognizing that that the department did not have in place a mechanism to detect and discipline such activity, that's what the panel addressed. So it was really not. It's interesting. It's corruption and money that prompted this reform, not years of individuals in the Central District, in the International District, in South Seattle, encountering harassment, unlawful stops, unlawful arrests, or excessive force. It wasn't that type of experience that prompted the creation of this accountability system, and maybe that's why it's not very responsive to those kinds of complaints.
And then the relationship of the review board to the OPA.
Right. It's a little, again, unclear how that's actually going to work in theory, and Allie can provide more details. In theory, the review board, they're not employees of the city, and the director of OPA is. So she's an employee of the Seattle Police Department, and she reports to the chief. The review board are volunteers. They're not, so nobody can fire them. They don't lose their livelihood if they do something unpopular, and that probably has some value. But they also have their powers are far from clear. They can review and audit. They're supposed to audit things that are not investigated. Complaints that come in, they're logged as what are called contact logs because the OPA decides that they don't represent a disciplinable offense. Even if they were true, no officer would be disciplined. The review board is supposed to look at those. That's how most protest-related complaints get classified because, again, they're complaints about policy, not about an individual officer. And as Ali said, they also have this broader charge, but they don't have subpoena power. They don't have any defined procedure to conduct investigations on their own or conduct hearings, and they don't have the power to overturn an OPA action. They don't supervise the OPA in that sense.
So we have about 10 minutes left. Now jumping back to the recent stuff that happened at LEIU and getting into tactics and stuff, I mean, it seems like we have a lot of evidence now, certainly stuff I've seen on tape of what went down at that protest on June 2nd. And if the review board turns you down on this for a public hearing, then the Defender Association is going to take the next step and bring this somehow out to the public?
I think the plan is to compile data anyways. I mean, just as if they're going to hold a hearing and just get it ready, get it presentable, and give it to them, even if they don't necessarily hold a public forum for it. Make this apparent that we're very determined to send this through what we have available. And if they don't listen, then we're going to show... I mean, people are already getting that information out, but we want it organized in such a fashion where we're directing this sort of protest to the police department, and this is the way we're going to do it, and we're going to give it to them anyways. Additionally, there's also a judicial auditor that's part of the Office of Professional Accountability, and I actually CC'd her on the email and sent her a letter too, and she has more authority than do the Citizen Review Board, and she's also independent. I don't think she's a city employee either, and she's allowed to review actual complaints and make recommendations, particularly in unnecessary force situations and unlawful arrests, I think, as well. And so, you know, that's another method. And she's a lawyer. And
is
so,
that Kate Flammer?
Yeah, yeah. And so hopefully, you know, having her in the mix, too, will be helpful because she does have more of a connection to the OPA command structure.
It seems... You know, I mean, I've been following this for a while. It seems really confusing for citizens what the heck they can do, where you go to deal with these issues.
Right. There is nowhere to go unless the review board proves to be such a place. For years, after demonstrations where these police tactics are used, there's been this really compelling testimony at city council hearings, particularly. And I remember, I mean, after this is true of Reclaim the Streets, the various anniversaries commemorating the WTO, I remember after, I believe it was the November 30th, 2001 event, a young man testifying to the council, to the Public Safety Committee, which is now called the Law, Safety, and Justice Committee, under Councilmember Compton. And he went up to the microphone, but he actually turned around and he faced the other people in the chamber instead of the committee because he said, I already know you're not going to do anything. So I'm really just talking to my fellow residents of Seattle when I say, you know, this is, we're providing witness to what occurred here. But nobody has any expectation that legislative action is going to be forthcoming. And because OPA, I mean, they received 50 complaints at following the anti-war protests, I believe 50 complaints after the LEIU, and they're all contact logs, except for a couple of allegations of excessive force by particular officers who could be identified. And so, you know, action will not be taken. And I think, you know, as Ali said, this is really... The evidence will be provided, and it's a test case. If the review board and the system that exists now doesn't respond to it, then we will know for sure that the existing mechanisms have to go and that something new needs to be put in their place.
Do you have a sense for if Sam Palka is frustrated with her lack of power and or the review board itself, if they're also frustrated?
I think, I mean, I know that the Citizen Review Board is frustrated. There was an article in the Seattle Times right around the time of the anti-war protests that said, we're not doing anything. We want to talk to the mayor. We want to understand what our role is. We feel like we overlap with the auditor. And so in that sense, I think that they are frustrated. And I actually interviewed Sam Palka a while ago and spoke with her, and I think she's reluctant to express too much. And I don't, you know, I don't want to speculate, but I think, you know, she has some good intentions about what she can and can't do, but keep in mind that she's like two doors down from the chief of police, and she's essentially the assistant chief of police, and so what she can do is pretty limited. So if she were frustrated, I don't know that there's much space for her to do anything about it.
But what she has said is that I feel like she's been as explicit as she can be in saying that in her role as currently defined, she cannot address policy, she cannot address deployment, she cannot address tactics. She can only look at instances where individual officers are accused of violating what the department teaches them. If what the department teaches them is the problem, she currently doesn't think she has authority to address that. She has said that that could change if the chief decided to change it, if the Seattle City Council decided to change it, or if the mayor decided to change it. Now, having said that repeatedly, I think we can only we can't look to her anymore. We have to look to the people she named and ask why they aren't taking up her invitation to give her that power.
And I think that's why this particular thing that we're doing with the Citizen Review Board is so compelling, because I think a lot of times people present their information to City Council or at open meetings, open forums, and, you know, speakouts, and they haven't necessarily like addressed the forum that is available, which is the OPA. And what we're doing is we're trying to go through that system and show them, here, it's flawed in this space with the director. It's flawed in this space with the Citizen Review Board if that doesn't work out. So we're actually pointing to the City Council, like legislation that they pass that isn't working. And so that, I think, is what's so compelling about this.
And just, I mean, if one were to look at the City Council having just passed the, well, not just, but passed the name tag ordinance that they don't seem to follow up on either. They occasionally, there's certain members that get irate about that, but certainly the Police, Fire, Courts, and Technology Committee seems mildly interested in these issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bob was involved in an attempt to get the council's attention after the anti-war protests, and maybe he can talk about what that felt like from the organizer's standpoint.
Oh, it's been very frustrating because it's not just been after the anti-war events, but we were back after the LEIU incident and had to crash Councilman Compton's meeting, basically. And he gave us a little time to talk, but it was very clear, partly because all of the other council members left the room, that the interest in hearing what we had to say was minimal. It also, and it was kind of a stark realization that I had in the middle of the testimony, that it was this deja vu thing. You know, it's like, you know, people are saying basically the same thing that we said to you all after the anti-war protests. And we asked some very specific questions. We asked for some very specific redress. There was never any response from the council. And here we were again. It's like we had the script and we're reading from the script. The same stuff came down again. And we asked Compton very specifically, so what do you think about this? And his response was to get up and say, enough. We've had enough of this testimony. If you all don't leave, we're going to clear the room. And he, in fact, did bring the police in and cleared us out of the room. So it's been very frustrating. And you know, I don't want to cast a pall over what we're going to come up against here, but I fear that we're going to not see the City Council be too cooperative in our efforts to push the OPA to take a stand on this, and then, you know, we're going to have to look for other forums at that point, if that's the case. Hopefully they will see the wisdom of working with us on this and trying to find some avenues for us to get some redress, but, you know, we'll see.
Mike, we should mention the legal hotline number that was established at the Defender Association right before the anti-war protests, and we're going to maintain that open indefinitely as a place for people to call who want to give testimony, who have witnessed police misconduct, both in the context of demonstrations and also in individual situations. And that number is 206-447-3990, and again 447-3990. during mass protest situations, that's staffed, but otherwise there's an answering machine, and we check it regularly. It's the project that Allie's working on this summer. And so anybody who's listening who has testimony to contribute to this appeal to the review board should definitely call that number, and we'll get back to you.
And is that a good number in general if they want to find out more about the Defender Association?
Yes, you can call that number. Our the Defender Association main number is 447-3900. And that if you have questions about criminal law or individual cases, you should call that number.
All right. We just have a few minutes left, so I wanted to leave it kind of open. What haven't we covered here that we need to convey to people, or any last messages that you have?
Well, I just want to make clear, because I think sometimes these discussions, for people who aren't right down in the mix when this stuff happens, they might think that we're talking about mistreatment of people who are committing civil disobedience or go down, you know, intending to peacefully but break the law. That's not what this complaint is about. This complaint is about the way that the police department treats people who attend, who intend to go to peaceful, lawful assemblies, peaceful, lawful marches, and the paramilitary tactics that are aimed at those people. And the complaint ranges from false arrest and excessive force, but includes the police shutting down demonstrations and taking away people's rights to free speech. So there's a whole range of damage that's done by this police action, and we're really not talking about a civil disobedience context. We're talking about the way that lawful demonstrators obeying the law are treated in the city.
Well, and as well, I've seen in, again, some of the videos, and have seen firsthand myself, not at the most recent protests, but at previous ones, completely innocent choppers all of a sudden walking out into, you know, and getting in the stream of pepper spray.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I was arrested. I was in the King County Jail with several quote-unquote completely innocent bystanders and choppers too. But one trend that I don't like to see is that, you know, when I was in jail with these people, I was arrested for handing out the legal hotline number on a sidewalk, by the way. But when I was in this holding cell, these folks were stressing that they were innocent. They weren't even protesters. And I guess our message is that protest is not a crime, and you're not more innocent because you're on the street to conduct commerce or you're just a bystander watching the show. You're innocent, and your actions are actually should receive special protection when you're engaged in political speech. It's just that in Seattle, that's turned on its head now, and the concept of innocent is just not applied to people who engage in political speech.
I also just want to make a quick plug for, not really a plug, but this is one of the projects we're working on through the Racial Disparity Project, but we're also interested in looking at individuals who are complaining with the Office of Professional Accountability and not being satisfied with what they're doing. We actually are working on another trial balloon for an individual who's complained several times and with what we think are pretty legitimate complaints that haven't really made it past the contact log necessarily. And so people can also call that hotline if they're not protesters, if they're just they feel they're being abused by police, they feel like they're not getting redress at all. So it's sort of it's a wide, you know, a broad project.
All right. Very quickly, the Racial Disparity Project, give us a description on that.
Since 1999, the Defender Association has had a racial disparity project that works to reduce racial bias in the criminal justice system, and as well as working on police accountability. We are challenging racial discrimination in Seattle drug enforcement. We've worked a lot on the way in which license suspension and car impoundment impacts particularly the African-American community in Seattle. And we've worked on other issues that pertain to the disproportionate representation of people of color in the criminal justice system.
Okay. Well, with that, we're pretty much out of time. But still have time for you to give the contact info for the Defender Association one more time.
We'll just give the hotline number, the police accountability hotline number, which
repeat
is...
Repeat after me.
206. This is written in indelible ink on some people's forearms, I think. 447-3990.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank you all three for coming in this morning.
Thanks so much.
Thanks
Mike.
For having us.
We have just been talking with Lisa Dugard and Allie Pearson, who are both with the Defender Association, and Bob Barnes, local Seattle activist, talking about the a review process for police actions here in Seattle.